it's still this mystery. There's so much that we don't know.
There's that sense of curiosity and excitement.
With many fish species, it's a mystery where they go as they are growing.
You need to know, actually, these moths and what they're up to at night.
We don't know their movement patterns.
There's still a lot more of them out there waiting to be discovered.
In Singapore, there's lights just about everywhere.
There's a kind of a fantasy about light.
Looking at the lights, we're able to track humanity's progress towards a more secure and more developed region, but we're also seeing the effects of it.
So-called kangaroo hop does work, but it seems to be forward.
If you've ever seen images from astronauts during the Apollo era, they were looking where the sun was shining on the Earth. But there's something going on in the back. That's our nighttime.
Night is half of our lives, and yet it's so understudied. NASA is just starting to scrape the surface of the human story and how integral that is to the planetary story. Nightlights data is an integral part of connecting those two.
The Black Marble was released by NASA, and it is now routinely generating measurements of Earth at night over the atmosphere, over the land, and over ocean waters.
This Nightlights data set is fundamental to understanding the pulses and the rhythms of human activities and human life at a planetary scale.
The ability to measure humans' activities and their impacts on our infrastructure and our society. That's what Black Marble is about. We've been blessed with the privilege to ask astronauts to take pictures of Singapore at night. We're seeing a thriving nation that is growing at an unprecedented rate, and trying to monitor the status of that infrastructure is something that we'll be able to do at night.
If you think about Singapore, a lot of the lights that we see from space are attributed to an aesthetic statement.
Really lie down like that, sideways. Yes.
First 10 seconds, very important.
Right from the day that we are born, when we make our first cry, if we open our eyes, probably going to see this glare of light. That is probably your first introduction to what light is all about. It stimulates the eye. Lighting can evoke a certain emotion. If you use red lighting in a space, it builds up passion. Blue lighting will probably give you a kind of a cool feeling. Green, fresh. I mean, take a look at the skylight behind us. There's a kind of a fantasy about light in the building. It allows anybody who visits a city to understand that you're within a particular precinct. If you go down to an entertainment center, then you would expect the lighting to be a little more flashy. So what you see in Marina Bay Sands is a consistent use of color that tells you it's a family of buildings that's all related.
We chose the color teal as a signature color of our precinct because it's associated with energy, vitality, creativity. So when you see the different areas being lit in teal light, this shows the visible unity of this district.
I think Singapore is quite smart in using light in a very considered manner. So we all know that there's such a thing as noise pollution. Light also has the potential of giving you bad effects of pollution. It confuses the eye. Where do you put your attention to? What if you consider Singapore as a 24-hour tourist attraction? You will certainly need light to do that.
So when you're working with light in an urban scale, the biggest challenge that we have as designers is how do we then create something that is totally composed and harmonious? That is the question.
We are seeing a change from the rhythms of life, from this kind of very strict day-night in these less developed places to this kind of 24-hour schedule in these highly urbanized large cities. I think a third of the world can't see the night sky anymore. The night has its importance. It's this time for rest, for reflection. Being able to see the stars is part of that. I'm a big advocate of not canceling the night so that we don't lose our sense of connection to the rest of the universe and to the night sky.
I'm a deep sky astrophotographer. I shoot photographs of the night sky with telescopes of objects in deep space, like galaxies, star clusters, and gas clouds, which are called nebulae. I'm a night owl, so I guess it comes naturally. I always found the night very peaceful. It's usually where we get a sense of quietness. Okay, I think this is it. How I shoot photos from Singapore is through the use of light pollution filters. Oftentimes when people think about light pollution, they think about the light that's on a street lamp shining right to your face. But that's not the light pollution that astrophotographers are concerned about. It's the aggregated light of the entire city that is shining right into the sky. This is actually called sky glow. No matter where you are in Singapore, there's no way to avoid this. What I've just set up is an equatorial mount. What this allows us to do is to track the motion of the stars. Although we don't feel it, the Earth is in constant motion. We are spinning once every 24 hours. To grab that long exposure photograph and keep the stars sharp, this mount is essential to create that image. Most of the photographs that I'm sharing belong to a class called nebulae. Nebulae are really one of the most beautiful things that we see in astronomy. When we are looking at one of these large gas clouds, what we are looking at is really the birthplace of the stars in the universe. Any star, including the Sun, would have came from such a nebula. They are really colourful. Reason being, the stars that are born within them usually produce a lot of radiation, creating glow. Tonight, I hope to be able to get the Rosette Nebula. I have already gotten a black and white image for it. In order to create a colour image, I would actually need to shoot through a different filter. Tonight, I hope to be able to get the colour rate in the final image. We are all set up and it's shooting right now. So now we wait for a couple of hours.
My name is Charlie Lim, and I call myself the painter of light, or in short, the pantographer. I paint you in the dark. The Latin word photography, photo is light, graphy is draw. Actually, what I'm doing is I draw with light.
I got to know Charlie Lim when Singapore was celebrating the 50th anniversary of Golden Jubilee. He wanted to so-called paint me as a portrait. He was trying to tell us that he could use light pantography to paint our portrait in darkness.
I have to have a certain amount of darkness. No need to be pitch black. Maybe 95% of the room to be dark.
To paint a portrait in the dark is counter-intuition. As a biologist, I know that in order to see, I need light coming into my eyes. To do the light pantography, first of all, you must have light.
In the younger days, while we were doing photography, we experiment all kinds of things. In those days where there's no computer, actually, I almost give up this technique because I failed. It took me about 7 years to understand this light pantography.
His secret weapon is a specially designed light source that he could control as an artist.
Okay, ready? Smile, don't move now. It's all about angle of light. Where do I go to you first? And when to stop painting?
He used his light source to enhance certain features that he liked.
Tell me more. So you only research on fishes?
Right now, yeah.
Maybe you can tell me what you're doing so that I can have a feel of...
I'm a software developer.
Oh. What I'm trying to say is, I want you to have a character. My objective is to pick out with my thoughts, to sketch, you know, the personality. Take a look.
Okay.
That's it.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was like oil painting. That is the signature of Charlie Lim. He tried to look beyond what people have achieved. And it's this spirit, which is also a very scientific spirit, the spirit of pushing boundaries.
My dream, my wish is to encourage others to realize the importance of light.
Singapore's network of the nature reserves and nature parks are actually home to a very wide diversity of wildlife. We have more than 400 species of birds and more than 60 species of mammals. Majority of them are actually nocturnal. But these nocturnal animals are very poorly understood. We hope that through our night surveys, we can actually obtain some baseline information of these animals in order to formulate effective conservation strategies.
Trees, 1, 2, 3. Okay, camera running.
The Species Recovery Program, which is led by the National Biodiversity Centre, is established to help conserve some of the critically endangered animals in Singapore.
That's it.
From our experience, usually there are more animals right after the rain.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully it's the case today also, since it's a new moon.
Best conditions.
We want to know whether there's any diet preferences of these animals. So we're hoping that with this information that we obtain, we are able to grow more of their food plants. So in the long term, we hope that we can increase their mating opportunities and ultimately increase the population in our protected areas.
It looks like a hostile spying squirrel.
But it's fat.
But it's fat.
Yeah.
It's gone.
We actually need a research permit to be able to do these surveys. These are visual surveys at night. They are conducted by the spotlighting technique, which involves shining bright light at the animals to check for their eye shine. NParks has started to adopt this state-of-the-art technology. The night vision equipment is actually something like a video camera that you can hold on your hand. It detects the animal by heat signals, so as long as the animal is moving around, it will be illuminated in white on the screen of the camera. The night vision equipment also allows us to record real-time footages of the animals when we do our surveys, which we can analyse after the surveys end.
Whoa, what happened?
Poop.
Based on the seeds that are inside, I think they could very well be the common palm civet. Yeah. It looks pretty fresh. Maybe the silk was just hanging down here. Less than 2 hours ago.
Oh man.
Let's just continue.
A lot of people feel that they can't really do anything to help these animals because they don't have science degrees. But not entering our nature reserve and our nature parks at night will allow the animals to exhibit their normal foraging behaviour, which will be important for their long-term survival.
Oh, wait. I see a ball.
Oh?
Yes, it's very big.
On the left of the trail.
So if the wild boar is directly on the boardwalk, what we will do is we will wait for them to move away to a safe distance before we continue on our surveys.
Okay, moving. Now. Bye-bye, boar.
the unpredictability of what I can see during each survey is actually a drawing point which attracts me to continue to do the surveys.
Tintiao, is that Kolugo?
Yeah? Oh, yeah, there's a Kolugo here.
I saw it through the night vision first.
You saw it through the night vision?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, just clinging to the tree.
Nice.
Yay.
Manage to record it?
Yeah.
Most importantly, I know that I'm actually contributing directly to the conservation of these animals in Singapore. Done for the day.
The levels of light that we have on Earth are mostly detrimental to the animal sphere, but a certain level of light is absolutely necessary for us. There's food, there's water, and then almost immediately after that, there's security. And light is part of that security for humans.
There are practices that we can take to make sure that the light is being used to its most efficient means, so that the light doesn't get thrown out to the sky. It's a really important challenge for humanity to tackle light pollution. Of all the environmental problems that we can face and solve, this is the easiest one. We're not trying to bury carbon in some bedrock. We're just trying to turn off the lights. And it's a problem not just on species, but on our own health, because it disturbs our sleep. It disturbs our rhythm. That and coffee, of course, but, you know.
One, two, three.
Sleep is extremely essential for your body. I would say it's as important to your body as drinking water.
Thank you.
I have been doing sleep and related studies since 2013. Our lab is actually very much interested in trying to understand how sleep deprivation is affecting learning in university students.
Hi, please come inside.
The participants who come to our studies are not suffering from any kind of sleep disorders like sleep apnea or anything. So we want to see the effect of sleep deprivation in these normal, healthy people.
We will be applying electrodes on your head today.
Sleep deprivation is associated with a greater risk of developing diseases like diabetes and heart disease.
It's now time for your test. Could you please sit here in this chair?
Suppose you pull an all-nighter, then the very next day there are some acute effects. You will not be able to do things as fast or as accurately. And then there are some chronic effects of sleep deprivation. If someone is working in the night shift, that night shift is actually classified as a carcinogen. You have more scope of developing cancers if you keep doing night shifts.
Hello, please come inside.
Let me take you into the sleep suite. Please have a seat. There are no clocks here, no windows or any external light. That is to ensure that participants do not know what time of the day it is. Sometimes we expose the participants to bright lights at the night time. Bright lights will suppress the levels of the sleep promoting hormone melatonin. So we want to test out what happens during that time.
Okay, so we're putting you to bed. So maybe can we move your shoes first?
No one is completely able to survive their whole life by not going to sleep in the night time. That means we are not completely nocturnal animals. What time we go to sleep depends on our individual bodies.
Okay, so I'll be outside.
Everyone has their own unique circadian rhythm. It's not that the night owls are lazy. It's just that their rhythm is slightly different from the rhythm of morning larks. That's all. Because we have infrared cameras here, we can monitor the participant while they're sleeping, even though it is dark.
Okay, so Christian will be performing sub-calibrations, so just follow my instructions, okay?
Look up. Look down.
Okay, you may sleep now.
I personally am a morning person. I like to get my sun early in the day into my eyes. There are some special photoreceptors in the eye. It sets your circadian rhythm in such a way that your melatonin levels increase at the appropriate time at night and help you to sleep. Singapore is considered to be the most light polluted city in the world. Some people take supplements to increase the melatonin levels of the night time. But the better way to go about it would actually be to not get exposed to bright light at night time.
Okay, lights off. Okay, now ready?
Each of us breathe 22,000 times a day, inhaling 11,000 liters of air. As a respiratory physician, I'm obviously interested in what's in that air and how that's interfacing with the lung. Professor Schuster has shown the content of the air is quite different in the day as it is at night.
Brilliant day for air sampling, isn't it? Then we can see that the airflow comes on the rear. That's excellent, yeah. Our goal was to sequence the hardest last frontier that genomics had to tackle. The finding was actually quite striking and has never been reported before, that there is a daily cycle in air.
We as humans have circadian rhythms. We wake up in the morning and we go to bed at night when it's dark. In the same way, the microorganisms, and specifically bacteria in the air, as well as fungi, seem to have a circadian rhythm.
The fungi that grow on the plants, those are extremely high levels during the night because they need high humidity and low temperature. The minute the sun comes up, they completely disappear.
Many of these fungi have never been described in relation to human health. And the immediate questions were, is this affecting me, you, my family, your family? This discovery that his team has put together has given us a huge new avenue in order to research in a lot more detail.
The air, the whole atmosphere around us, there is an ecosystem. We have no idea how this ecosystem behaves at the moment. That started us making cultures of the list of fungi that Professor Schuster gave us. The next question was, are people responding to them?
Rather than dust, could microorganisms in a specific environment in the air be in fact the cause of allergic disease in some groups of patients? In order to address this, my team has developed a three-dimensional lung organoid model, which is pretty much a lung in a dish. We can then expose the microorganisms that we have obtained from the air to those cells.
The preliminary work that we did really showed us that certain groups of people with severe disease were responding. We are actually seeing that the fungi could possibly be the first thing that triggers a reaction.
It is important for many people have respiratory problems. The big finding is that the big change is not in the season. The big change is between day and night. And the question is, can we engineer healthy air inside buildings? What do we need to change?
It may be as simple as opening your windows at night that will change your air microbiome and therefore change your exposures.
When you look at this imagery, the crispness of the nightlights data that we can see is amazing.
If you follow ocean biology and fisheries monitoring, you know that the world's protected around many areas. We call them MPAs, Marine Protected Areas. If you have ships hunting for squid and they're using lights to warm up the waters of the sea, we're gonna see that. If you're doing it within borders of MPAs, you're breaking international laws.
See that? These are fishing vessels.
pitch dark ocean, but they're there.
Our team has worked with countries around Southeast Asia to monitor illegal, unreported, unregulated fishing from space. Satellites are able to get us to have a better understanding of who is actually doing the illegal work.
Pirates tend to conduct their activities at night, but we are still able to detect them.
One, two, three. Stay there now.
Piracy incidents have been increasing throughout the recent years. This puts the crew lives at risk.
That's it.
Nighttime, we have our higher fatigue level. We have a loss in concentration. This gives pirates the opportunity to attack the boats. MAPS is ST Engineering's Maritime Anti-Piracy System. It is a radar system integrated with camera sensors and artificial intelligence.
So I think this is a 300...
It's designed to protect ships from piracy attacks. It's an unmanned system. It's fully automated. You can leave it here, and it will survey the surrounding waters for you and detect suspicious maneuvers and provide early warning system for the crew. We have a demo system installed on this boat, and to simulate the piracy attacks, we have another smaller fast craft. Imagine yourself as a big commercial tanker. You're moving across a channel, but you did not notice a ship that is docked near the shore. So this shoreline is a very good point for the pirates to hide at. In the middle of the night, they know that you might not be looking at your surroundings because it's already dark. So that is the one that we are trying to simulate.
Hey, you all ready?
Okay, you can proceed. Do the U-turn to us, sir.
So this ship passing already?
So once you move past them, they will then make a U-turn about. What they do is they just charge by your tail to try to board your ship.
Charging towards us.
Yeah. So it's about 0.4 nautical miles. We have an AI module that constantly flags out any suspicious maneuvers. It will instantly pan the camera towards the target and sound off an audible alarm. It eliminates the early surprise factor that the pirates use to board the ships at night. When they realize that they are being detected, it's actually a strong deterrence for them not to approach you anymore. The other most common maneuvers that are performed by the pirates is direct charging. When the pirates comes directly charging towards us, we are still able to detect them. We are using a thresholdless algorithm, meaning that we can detect the smallest of targets. Pirates tend to use wooden boats. The signal return from the radar will be smaller, but we are still able to detect them day or night.
When you look at these images for the first time, what you see is a black orb of the Earth where the oceans are all encapsulated in darkness. It will be difficult for us to pick up ocean life with a satellite. But Black Marble is focused on the nighttime patterns and rhythms of settlements. And so with the human settlements popping out from the natural world, we can really focus on what is our impact on the planet. The ability to understand how human settlements are changing over time really gives us a sense of the kinds of major driving forces that are changing land, air, and oceans right now.
We have a team of 4 people. We are trying to understand what's in our waters. Ready?
Yep.
Yep.
We are looking at the zooplankton, so the animal plankton. Zooplankton are tiny to young of marine organisms. We're going to take a boat out to Sisters Island and the islands around them and sample the water column and then examine the plankton samples that we get. Okay, let's get the light preps. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
For this.
We try to carry out this project at night because plankton often rise up to the surface at night. This phenomenon is known as diurnal migration. And also, a lot of plankton are actually attracted to light. So at night, we can use light to try and entrap some of them. This project is being headed by Edwin.
Let's put the light traps over there, 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 and there.
OK.
Put it 1 meter below the water surface. Let the trap slowly sink in. When it's dusk, the zooplanktons will actually emerge from the substrate and actually enter the light trap. Zooplanktons might not make sense to anyone when they are so small, when you don't see them in your everyday life. But zooplanktons are very important. They are actually one of the few organisms that forms the basis of our food chain. Almost all marine organisms feed on these tiny zooplanktons.
Now we are going out to the channels in between the islands, and then we'll come back and retrieve these light traps. Maybe to that side of St. John's or Lazarus. Okay, Lazarus is okay with me. Okay, set. Okay, let's go. So by pulling this net through the water column at night, we are getting the entirety of the zooplankton community. The life of zooplankton is really poorly known. We get the very small plankton right after they hatch. For some species, we don't know where they go to. And then a few months later, we find them again, but they now look a lot more like tiny individuals of the adults. So we want to find these middle stages of this life cycle. Once you go into the lab, that's where the pieces of the puzzle fit together.
I'm a fish person too. Because they are fighters, they are resilient, and they're colorful.
Yeah, people like them, right?
Painting now.
Our hope is that we will come to a good understanding of species that occur in the oceans. The juvenile of some species, they don't look anything like the adult. For a lot of crabs, they go through a multi-stage process. So they start out looking like little commas, very much like this. So these are called zoea. They're very, very small. And then they go on to become the fifth stage, which looks like this. And these are called megalope. And eventually, they will grow up to look like the crabs that you imagine when you think of crabs. These shrimps are opossum shrimps. They're called thus because they have this brood pouch where the females keep their eggs, and they don't grow much larger than these. We actually collected a boxfish. It looks a bit like the adult. It's very hard as well. Most of juvenile fishes or fish larvae, they're very soft, but the boxfish is extremely hard. Over time, as we get more and more of these organisms, we can know how they look like at a particular stage of the life cycle. What is it that they do? Where they are found? In understanding what we have, we can manage our marine areas better. Then, together with, you know, all the other information that other scientists from all over the world are getting, we will understand our world's oceans.
I'm ready to start now. Okay, camera running.
For Singapore, if I'm studying moss from year to year, that variation in the moss population is a reflection of the health of the ecosystem.
Yes, perfect.
I love nature. There's no question about it. Anything to do with nature.
Looking at the map, you can see it's quite a big patch of forest.
That's right. It's the first time we come to this position. So we'll see. We might be lucky, and this might be really a potential for some moths we haven't seen before. What's really fantastic about Junior, he's an outdoor man. In the middle of a forest, you don't want to be on your own.
Ready? Let's try. Okay, on.
My students are able to tell me all the makes of the different cars in Singapore. But if you show them the different morphs, they are less intimately related to them. And therefore, I think it is important for us to catalogue them and share with Singaporeans that there's so many amazing morphs that live just right next to us. And that's why I do this. There's a patch of forest here.
I think that will be a good place, behind those trees. Mm. It's been raining recently, so the mud is still a bit wet. Mm.
Shall we?
You set up?
Yeah.
We're starting from the top here. When I first arrived here, recording of moths was non-existent. We discovered a total of about 399 species over 2 years. Now, our current study is trying to find out the spread of those species. Is there more, is there less, or is it the same? It's like almost the lottery. The new one you see is what excites you more.
So the UV lamp, it shines the UV light onto the white cloth, and then it attracts the moth.
There's one back here. It's very common in this area, this one. Yeah.
Raymond takes the pictures with their wings open so that we can get a clearer picture of the patterns on the wings.
They're food for nightlife, especially bats. Their caterpillars will be food for birds during daytime. They cross-pollinate flowers to flowers. Cross-pollination means you get fruits. So it's all part of that ecosystem.
Raymond.
Oh, here it is.
Look at that.
Here it is. This is like a tiger moth. Mm. Butterflies are daytime. Moths, they live in the dark, and so they have to use different sensors. Very unusual antennae, you know. There are some very sophisticated antennae which you don't see in butterflies at all, especially the males. It needs that sensation to be able to locate the females in the dark. Junyan, we haven't seen this before, have we, here? The lines on its abdomen are black and yellow like wasps. Initially, you think they're all boring colors. Slowly, slowly, you find there are so many subtle beauties there. All that subtlety is so rich, it's got more things to excite you. And once you're in, you're in.
After he takes the picture, I catch them, and then we can keep it for the museum.
At the public gallery of the Lee Kong Chian Natural History Museum, most people will be familiar with the dinosaurs that we have, as well as all the other animal exhibits. But this is not the only thing that the museum does. Beyond this level, we actually have our collection area that people don't get access to. And this is 3 floors of dedicated space of zoological specimens. And also we are the national collection within Singapore. These are Raymond's moths. So our role within the museum is actually to make sure that they are kept in the best condition possible for as long as possible too. The sphingids, part of the hawk moths. So this long straw that you see here, this is actually the proboscis. So it actually uses the proboscis to suck up nectar from flowers. So they are actually helping to pollinate flowers. And this is another species called Lisa Zampa. So this is common in Singapore as well. And some people would have encountered this in large swarms. So if you have this one of them flying into your face, you'll be spooked. But actually, they're quite harmless. For conservation reasons, it's really important for us to know what species we have, because if you don't know what we have, well, first of all, you don't know what you're losing.
So there are something called species recovery plans that can be implemented so that we can maintain the ecological balance within the nature reserves that we have. This survey itself is actually very useful to have what we call baseline data. We can actually compare with what we used to have 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So we do have other insects within this whole collection as well. Within our museum, we have an expert on fireflies, Dr. Wan.
The whitish part here is actually the light organ. The light organ is underneath the abdomen. This is the main character that distinguishes fireflies from other beetles. Fireflies use light to communicate to each other. It's a warning signal to the predator, but it's also a mating signal. So when we have light pollution, it actually affects the way they communicate. In Singapore, there are more than 10 species of fireflies. You can actually find this species, Troptis valida, in Pasir Ris Park. Troptis in Greek means folded wing. Fireflies of the genus Troptis are known as mangrove fireflies because they can only live in mangrove area. If we remove mangrove habitat from Singapore, we can no longer see this population. Although we still have two species of congregating fireflies in Singapore, the number of individuals has declined. We can now only see maybe few hundreds, or maybe less than that.
One, two, three.
Pasir Ris Park mangrove is a very precious forest. We hope that we can still sustain the firefly population here.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
The nursery here is created as part of our effort to reforest the Pasir Ris Park mangrove. We actually grow these saplings so that we can plant mangrove species here in Pasir Ris or elsewhere in Singapore. We have replaced the park lights with more wildlife-friendly lighting, and the lights will shine downwards instead of upwards so that there'll be less light pollution into the mangrove.
Okay. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, guys, so let's go ahead with our survey and hopefully we get some good results tonight. Let's go.
We are doing our long-term mangrove firefly survey. We are trying to study the long-term population trends of our mangrove fireflies in Singapore.
Quite dark, actually.
Yes. So just watch your step as you go. We won't be catching any specimens. We will just be counting the number of adults and larvae. The chances of seeing them is not really that high, so if you manage to see one, we will be counting ourselves lucky for the day.
It's usually easier to find the adults because when they are flying around, you can see their lightings quite clearly. But for the larvae, the lights are actually quite dim on the ground.
Liu Qi, is this a larvae?
Yeah, there's a larvae.
Yeah, there's a larvae there.
Yeah, it's a larvae, so the light is really weak.
Tonight, we have our volunteers who have been supporting us on this mangrove firefly species recovery program.
Oh, there's one there.
It's very bright.
All is flying around. During the larva stages, they actually have a carnivorous diet, so they prey on the soft-bodied animals such as snails and other slugs as well. So they actually help to control the population size of the molars in our mangroves, thereby ensuring a very healthy and balanced ecosystem.
One of the trails where I have seen 10 larvae plus 2 adults, it was pretty difficult to spot the larvae because they are actually in the mud.
Okay, let's go. Tonight, we didn't manage to see a lot of fireflies, So this is why we really want to do more surveys like this, so that we can really understand the population trends of these mangrove fireflies.
Hi, Evan.
Oh, hey, Charlie. Hi.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, man.
Yeah, so much about you.
What influenced you to pick up these things?
I don't know. I think just I love astronomy, lah.
Oh, is it? Oh, you studied
from reading encyclopedias as a kid.
Oh, wow. 1, 2, 3.
There's something about astronomy that excites quite a lot of kids, and I suppose for me, that sense of curiosity and excitement has never really left me.
Oh. This is the last shot.
Wow. Okay. Oh, that's amazing.
So it's like you're capturing the outer space, and now I bring it in for you, in your space.
It's done, and that is 2 hours of exposure from tonight. I have already gotten a black and white image for the Rosette Nebula. And what this allows me to do is to actually combine the data from these two different filters and generate a colour image. As the name suggests, it appears like a rose that's viewed from top down. Interestingly, it's also coloured red. Every time I see an image, I don't just see colours. I see an incredible, vast universe. Thinking about where we stand in the grand scheme of things, how insignificant we are, and perhaps what lies out there, I think that is something that's very inspiring because it really shows the extent of natural beauty that exists literally out of this world.
There's everything still to learn. I think the next decade is going to be just a totally exciting time for Nightlights because we will start to be able to integrate knowledge about how human societies on a whole are impacting the planet.
It behooves us to treasure the night, to understand that we need to rest. And that rest carries with itself a covenant in how we behave with other creatures that are part of this beautiful planet that we call Earth.